welcome, Fat Campers. We're really excited about an interview that we ended up doing with Trek that's coming up, but we have a few caveats to start out with.
There's some good news and there's some bad news.
So the good news is that we had some really good information from Trek. We had four people on the line with us that were all very, very, very senior and very influential in what they've been doing in the Plus and the Fat Bike world. And the recording with them, awesome.
You will not miss anything that they say.
However, you are going to miss most of what Andy and I ended up saying through that interview, because we ran into some technical glitches and ended up losing all the audio of our end of that conversation.
Audacity took a shit.
So what we're trying to do is the important stuff, the Trek guys, everything that they end up saying, we've got. And what we're going to try to end up doing is recreating and try to ask the same questions that we remember asking at the time to kind of lead into their questions. So we'll try to give you the best context we can, but we just kind of got to roll with what we got.
So we went back and listened to everything, and then we're like, I wonder what that question was that they just answered. So we've listened to it as well many times.
And I guess the one other piece for this, Travis Brown is one of the people that we talked to through Trek, and he was on a cell phone, and initially his cell phone reception wasn't all that great. It gets a lot better a few minutes in, so hang in there. For the vast majority of the podcast, the Trek audio is really good. So thank you for putting up with some of our technical snafus. I think you're going to be really excited, though, to end up hearing what Trek has to say.
Right on.
So we're really excited to be talking to Trek. We have four honchos. I don't have any other way to end up putting it on the line right now. And when I originally was approached by Fat Bike Gomez, he ended up asking us, who do you want to talk to? And we said right away, Trek. And the big reason for this is that both Andy and I have been riding 29 plus wheels for a while, are really sold on the bigger wheels and the plus size riding. And over the time that we've been riding these, we've seen Trek introduce not only the Stash, which is kind of a category defining bike, and then they also come out with their new Farley that's got some very large wheels with the 27.5 by 4 inch. So there's been some really interesting stuff going on in Trek, and we're just super excited to have an opportunity to end up talking about those specific products and also talking about some of the concepts behind it and why Trek really seems to be going for the big wheels. So with that said, I'd like to end up turning over the mic to our four guests here. If you wouldn't mind just sort of stating your name, your title, and what in layman's terms that means for your role in Fat and Plus Bike development, it would be wonderful.
All right, I'll kick it off. So I'm Alex Applegate. I'm kind of a brand manager for Bontrager. I work on the hard goods side of things, so that brings in the wheels and the tires for kind of the Bontrager side of things.
And I'm Travis Ott. I am the brand manager for the mountain bike category, so the marketing guy on the mountain bike side of things.
And I am Ted Alsop. I'm an engineer in our mountain bike group. I mostly concentrate on R&D, and I've been working on the Fat and Plus bikes the last few years now. So.
And I'm Travis Brown, and I'm an athlete for Trek who's retired from full-time racing into... I work with Ted, and I run some field development programs in the mountain region.
I think that's a little too humble of an introduction. Travis Brown is kind of a legend in the mountain bike world. He's a mountain bike Hall of Fame inductee. He's been an Olympian. He was 2002 single speed world champion. In 1999, he won the Norba National cross country title. He's been in the scene for ages, and he's an inspiration to a lot of us out there, because not only did he kick butt for a lot of years, he's really still been active in the bike scene and is been very influential. He's one of my longtime heroes.
Well, thank you.
So let's kick it off with the first question here. But first, some background. If you look at the trends that are going on in the industry right now, it seems like almost all the other significant companies in the industry are jumping on the B plus or 27.5 plus bandwagon. And Trek hasn't done that. Trek ended up introducing the Stash. It's a 29 plus. They're now going with the Farley. It's this 27.5 by 4 inch. So nobody else in the industry is doing that. You guys are really kind of, I don't want to say paving the way, because, you know, Surly ended up doing some things with the 29 plus first, but, you're the probably the biggest player to be a hardcore advocate of the bigger diameter wheel, the 29 plus size. And you know, when you look at the 27.5 by 4, that's pretty much the same diameter as a 29 plus. It's also pretty much the same diameter as, you know, a 4.7, 4.8 inch, 26 inch tire. So the biggest fat bike tires that are around, in previous years. So Trek is a huge company. They kind of have a conservative, reputation, and you guys are doing some crazy stuff. You obviously have some numbers or something. I mean, there's a firmly held belief that, you know, these bigger wheels must be better if you guys are doing this. If you guys don't mind talking about that, why is Trek so geeked about the big wheels?
I think that's a great question. I mean, especially considering the landscape of what a lot of the rest of the industry is doing. And it basically comes down to researching the historical science on wheel performance in different terrains and executing prototypes and taking that direction to the next iteration of a prototype and basically coming up with a product that's based on our own validation and the characteristic that we're looking for. So the 29 plus product that's in the market now, industry was doing, and it was, you know, it was based on really consistent and convincing field research.
So what kind of field research were you guys doing? Were they, you know, timed test runs on a closed course where you're holding all the variables constant, you know, recording power and things like that? Or was this, you know, something you guys were doing in, you know, sort of a more lab environment? How did you validate these prototypes, and how did you really refine your process?
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. And, you know, once the bookends were moved so far out by some of the rest of the industry, both with fat bikes and then with 29 plus bikes, it allowed us a great opportunity to look at those products and what we felt was done right with them and what could be improved and what was the performance potential there. So we started with the NARD as the baseline test platform and identified what characteristics were positive and what could be improved with that. And we took that into a development project and created some tires of our own and some iterations of that tires and test mule bikes around that tire. And at each stage of that, we learned a little bit more and, you know, evolved the process and decided what we liked and what we didn't like and did another version.
And one thing that Travis was alluding to there is the kind of the science side of this. There's not a whole lot of science out there about, you know, soft wheels rolling on soft terrain. There's a lot about, you know, automotive tires on asphalt and things like that. But Travis introduced me to a book called Bicycle Science. It's the third edition by David Gordon Wilson. And in that, there's a good amount of information about the relationship of tire diameter and wheel diameter to flotation. And also wheel width is another component of that. But one of the things this points to is that you have better increases, so larger gains in reduction of rolling resistance and flotation by increasing the diameter of the wheel rather than increasing the width. And I think that has also played into what Travis is talking to, which is our actual field testing and ride testing on the 29 Plus platforms that also pointed us towards the 27.5 by 4 tires.
Yeah. It's an interesting anecdote where it came from, too, that Ted was telling us about, where it's the egg industry is where a lot of the research was done on this.
Yeah, it's all agricultural studies in the 50s, where they were trying to make their tractors more efficient and their field equipment more efficient rolling through soft soil. It's cool stuff.
That's really interesting to hear you guys ended up going back to some of the agricultural and engineering that was done with tractors and things like that. So, I mean, based on that science and your testing, do you think that 29 plus outer diameter or, 26 by 5 inch tire diameter is the optimal for a bicycle, a human powered bicycle?
Well, I'd say optimal is a little tough because we're still limited by of the tires we can make. We were really happy with where 29 plus was as far as rolling resistance goes and, having pretty good flotation for being a 3-inch tire, which started steering us towards the 27.5 by 4. And the other convenient thing about 27.5 by 4 is that it matches up very nicely with 26 by 5 as far as the diameter goes. So you could have just about the same diameter as 26 by 5. And then that would line up with 27.5 by 4.
Hey, Travis, I think your cell phone might be cutting out here.
Okay. What I started to say was, what we found with those diameter studies is that it's a more efficient use of material, a more economical use of material to grow diameter in order to increase the tire volume and the efficiency of rolling on soft terrain than width. So within the given bike package, the 27.5 by 4 was the best all conditions tire. Now that tire doesn't have quite the same volume as a 26 by 5 inch tire. So in the very, very softest conditions, you still have a little bit more flotation than 27.5 by 4, but the rolling efficiency in a soft terrain is not as good because you're basically mashing down an inch wider trench in that really soft snow.
So is there a point where we're going to end up having tire diameter get too large or the width of the tires get too large and sort of get past the point of diminishing returns?
We haven't got to that point yet. And, the two big question. Really, there's no bad wheel size, whether it's volume or diameter, unless the wheel's square. And it's just going to have unique characteristic of unique handling characteristics. It's going to do some things well. It's going to have a weight associated with that extra diameter and volume. But in the right terrain, it might be the best thing. So I don't think we have explored really the point where there's a tire that isn't appropriate for a bike, and those geometry challenges.
So am I hearing correctly that for 2017, Trek is going to end up releasing the fat penny farthing for the ultimate race machine?
Yep, that's right. High performance penny farthing races. That's right. Something too I wanted to hit on too is like exploring this, like how big is too big and all these questions like that is, something that Trek really has the advantage here is that our relationship with Bontrager. So we can like openly collaborate and explore. So when it comes to wheel systems, both tires and wheels and rims, and tubeless ready setups and as well too, that there's a really nice relationship there. So something I think that makes a world of difference is just the tubeless ready setup, the Farley as well too, being able to shake off so much extra weight, the extra performance that you get out of that, and that's just because Trek and Bontrager are under the same roof and it's a lot of the same people working on these things.
Yeah, and you saw that with the Stash Plus with the Chupacabra really kind of helped make that bike what it is, and that was just a collaboration between the Trek team and then the Bontrager team. Both working so close under the same roof, kind of the same goal. So it's really made for a pretty special bike.
Absolutely, yeah.
You just walk down the hall and say, hey, instead of...
Make me a tire!
Instead of trying to do a conference call.
Well, and so much of this emerging, category with unique tire sizes that the bike is a co-development with a tire and a wheel platform. They can't really happen independently. If you're looking, we want this bike to do have these performance characteristics specifically. If you're waiting for a tire to exist to do the bike around, and you're waiting for a bike to exist to build the tire for, it just won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So am I hearing correctly that you guys think there might be a much larger application for this larger wheel size diameter? For instance, like it might end up creeping into cross-country racing or things like that, where the bigger diameter would end up having rolling efficiencies and offer an advantage in certain courses.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the clear direction for adding volume or diameter is that on moderately rough terrain, rolling resistance is rewarded by both extra volume that you can run at lower pressure or extra diameter that to a small degree you can run at lower pressure and improves the attack angle over the terrain. The big difference in this historical science that we referenced that kind of influenced our projects recently is that the use of material to grow diameter is much more efficient. So your weight penalty in growing diameter is less than growing volume. The characteristic of getting extra traction or rolling efficiency from volume and diameter are different too. And that kind of led into what we did with the Stash frame design. So the necessity of leaning a bike more, a 29-inch wheeled bike compared to a 27.5 or 26-inch wheeled bike, well, we knew that that aspect of the bike platform was going to be more significant with a 29x3-inch tire, which is even, you know, almost a 32-inch diameter. And so that was one of the challenges. Well, we're going to have this sluggish perception of 29-inch wheels, and then we're going to go to 29+. What do we do about that? And Ted came up with a fantastic address to that critique, which was asymmetrical stays and super short chain stays. So it really reduced that aspect of the bike that some people would identify as lumbersome or difficult to initiate a corner.
And I'll add to what Travis said in that the longer contact patch we see with these wheel systems with larger diameter, also that contact patch works better. It provides a better, more constant traction as you're going over rough terrain. And I think that's another one of the kind of the good qualities about larger diameter wheels over just higher volume is that the longer contact patch is more efficient again.
Yeah, you think yourself like riding up a trail and going over a log, that longer contact patch is going to grip the ground on either side of that log, and you're never going to lose traction with the surface you're actually riding across. Whereas if you got shorter and wider, there's likely a point where you hit that log and you're actually not touching what you have been riding on. So it's just a better way to get more traction more consistently.
So you guys seem to be advocating that bigger diameter has some serious advantages. But recently we've started to end up seeing some companies come out advocating for a smaller wheel size. For instance, fat bikes with 24-inch wheels for smaller-sized riders. How do you guys mesh the proportionality of the wheels with the performance characteristics that are obviously beneficial when you get to be a bigger diameter?
Well, we do have a smart wheel size philosophy that runs through our lines where we do have some size-specific wheels within a model line. For the fat bike category, if you're looking at an enthusiast who wants to ride on terrain that is kind of unrideable on a normal tire size, then the additional volume and diameter are so significantly outweigh, you know, the size specific aspect of it that, you know, those compromises are in our minds well justified. And the 24-inch fat bike doesn't really come into play until below what we would call an extra small adult size frame.
Right. And I think that there are definitely packaging and frame design things you have to work around because of diameter, but with a well-designed frame, I think there's good workarounds. You don't have to have, you know, a mile-long chainstays. You don't have to have high standover. there are ways around these challenges to make a large wheel fit a smaller person.
Yeah, and we noticed that probably the most on cross-country bikes where people are really trying to get into that low hand position, I mean, and just really for those, like, those World Cup level, those racers who want that every ounce of performance just milked out of that bike. And so for riders like this who are using the fat bikes and the Stash as more of a trail bike, getting that proper fit on the bike, it's achievable.
Yeah.
So that seems to be a perfect lead-in to talking about the Stash. Now, this is an appropriate time to end up saying that both Andy and I are really sold on the 29-plus concept. Both he and I have had, you know, sort of experiences where we've really benefited from the advantages of it. It feels fast. It's super fun, you know, super grippy. It's great for our Midwest trails. This weekend, we ended up riding a Stash, and we're just kind of blown away by how playful and fun the bike is. You know, you guys are kind of bucking the trend by going with the 29 plus instead of the 650B. And I think most riders that throw a leg over a Stash understand why, but you know, this is a super exciting bike to ride, and it's really kind of category defining. Why did you guys go that route?
Exactly. And once we had established, we built a prototype for that bike, and, you know, we started hearing rumblings about B plus, but we already had, you know, a 420 millimeter chainstay. You can run the chainstay shorter. I run my Stash for about 408 millimeters, which is just about 16 inches. But once we'd established that you could fit a 29 plus tire and wheel into that chainstay length, there was no reason, we couldn't find a justifiable reason to look at 650B plus on that bike, because why wouldn't you want the biggest, fastest rolling tire and wheel you could get?
There was actually a fair amount of debate in the development of that bike. Like, going into it, just ahead of the release of the launch of it, we knew that there was going to be a bunch of 27.5 plus bikes coming to market at that time. And the discussion was, you know, the bike was compatible. We built it with this rear, with the sliding dropout, so it could take a 27.5 plus wheel, and it would fit one, and it would ride just great. But the discussion was, do we need to put, like, spec one just because everybody else is going to have one? But at the end of the day, we ended up just sticking to our guns, because with the 29 plus, it was a better bike, and it rode better, and it was what we were trying to achieve. So, and I'm glad we did. As well, too, because I think people are, once they get on it, they're amazed at how much fun it is to ride and how nimble 29 plus bike can be.
Yeah, and that bike is definitely the right combination of factors. You know, you gain a lot of stability from the size and the momentum of the large tire and wheel, but then you kind of give it back with a short chainstay, and that, you know, it kind of equals out to being a pretty maneuverable but also stable package. You know, it's it just kind of works.
Yeah, it's a very versatile bike. It's a 29er that you can have fun on a pump track, and it's also the bike that I chose to do a bikepacking tour from Durango to Denver on the Colorado Trail. So it says a lot.
So did you find a point at which the chainstays were actually too short and weren't responding, you weren't getting the performance that you were looking for?
Yeah, we did. The initial prototypes of that bike actually had, I always think chainstay in millimeters, but a 395 millimeter chainstay. You know, there is this, like, that, we'll say 410 to sub 400 millimeter chainstay length, you start to encounter a decent amount of harshness, because you're kind of so over the rear axle, the bike isn't flexing and absorbing the bumps, and it's just not for everybody. And that was another big reason for having the sliding dropout on the Stash. It's great for single speed and for wheel conversion, but it's also so you can really kind of dial in how you want your Stash to ride. And if, you know, a 420 is pretty safe, but you can go to 408 or something like that if you want to have your bike be really maneuverable.
Yeah, other with that dropout, you can go to a 405 with, yeah, 15 millimeters to throw.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into, like, maybe Project Weird, where this thing even came about from?
Yeah, so the Stash started life as this hardtail that I built in, I guess it was 2012, called Project Weird, and it was like a kind of, I guess, like a dual slalom 29er. So it had a super short 395 millimeter chainstay and the sliding dropout, with a much longer range. That was 30 millimeters of of travel on that sliding dropout, just so we could use it as kind of a development piece to kind of start zeroing in on what the optimum short chain sailing could be for a T9er.
And at this point, Ted isn't building a bike. He's building a sort of R&D project to find out how short, what is the shortest chain stay you can get on a 2.9er.
Yeah, and we never really intended that bike to ever become anything. That was kind of the reason it's called Project Weird, was to scare people away from it so no one would want to try to get in and turn it into something. But yeah, that's the bike we kind of found. Okay, 395 millimeters is just too short. This bike is kind of rough riding. Man, I wish we had a larger volume tire. And then a few months later, 2.9 Plus kind of came on the scene, and the bike kind of evolved from there.
2.9 Plus came on the scene, but then also 1x drivetrains were starting to take off as well, too. So all of a sudden that freed up some things. And then we're looking at the rear axle standards as well, from 142, moving those up to over 148. That was also – so there's a bunch of things that kind of just right time, right moment sort of piled into this and sort of took shape altogether.
So Trek was a big mover on making the boost standard happen with SRAM. Was that in anticipation of the plus size wheels, or was that something that was totally separate and the plus size wheels just happened to be a side benefit?
Originally, it was just to stiffen a 29-inch wheel to a comparable stiffness of a 26 or 27.5. But this development project was going on in parallel, and we realized very quickly that there were big advantages to plus size and 148 rear spacing.
Another big goal of Boost was to add more clearance between the chainring and the chainstay yoke, which is always a very kind of one of the harder, tighter parts of the bike. So we'd always intended to add more clearance up front. We never really thought we'd need to add clearance between the chainring and the tire, which is kind of what happened with the Stash, with how Boost is such an important part of that bike. So it was we had kind of those things in mind, but we didn't really quite have the Stash in our minds when we came up with Boost.
I guess that's one of the things that kind of impresses me about what Trek has done, because the Boost standard seems to have allowed a lot of manufacturers to jump into the plus size market, because it just gives that room for, you know, a wider tire. It gives the room for a 3-inch tire. So, I mean, and maybe this is just my armchair engineer, you know, perspective, and it's a lot more complicated than this, but it seems like once you widen out the rear wheel and you get a little more clearance because of the chain line changing, it's pretty easy to make a plus bike, because all you got to do is widen out the rear end a little bit and your, you know, B plus bike is kind of the same diameter as a 29er. So there's not a lot of re-engineering that necessarily has to take place. You're only making changes in one dimension, whereas that's what's so impressive about what Trek has done, is that, you know, you've made changes in two dimensions. Not only are you making the tire wider, but you're also accommodating a bigger diameter wheel. So you're really engineering on two different dimensions and doing a whole lot more, which has to be a lot more difficult.
Thank you.
I guess that wasn't much of a question. I guess where I'm going with that comment is, you guys kind of went out on a limb. It seems to be a lot easier for other manufacturers to end up going plus, but you guys not only just ended up going plus, you guys went all in and really built around this bigger diameter wheel.
Well, I think it's you know, a luxury that we have as far as being of a size that we can address all of those small details for a really unique bike, you know, whether it's hub width or tire diameter and all those things. And when you address all those details and change things a little bit, the net gain at the end is a package like the Stash. So
I think that's kind of indicative of our process too. So for better or for worse, Trek kind of takes things on, you know, from like, you know, the very first starting point, you know, from like wipe the slate clean. And so it tends to mean our development process can be a little bit longer at times as well. So like Stash, for example, I mean, that was 2.5 years of development about, right?
Yep.
And, but at the same time, it also is kind of you throwing all of our resources at it.
And that was
considering things from start.
It was such a moving target. You know, we didn't have it was originally a rigid bike, and then we, we were actually able to get a suspension fork for it. So it was continually evolving as we kind of shaped that bike into being something we could sell. I think we've applied, I would hope we've applied kind of the same concepts to the, you know, the new Farley as well, as far as kind of adding versatility and kind of a forward thinking in the standards.
I mean, maybe talking about the development of the Farley too is something that we were kind of like, what was that starting point for that bike? And something we were seeing was that there was a lot of, there were a lot of people riding fat bikes on terrain that was either they're riding it on dirt or they were riding it on groomed snow. And so having that bike that with that 27.5x4 actually provided a better experience on those terrains. And we wanted a bike that felt like a mountain bike and not a big sort of like beach cruiser type thing out there as well. So that's why we went with that standard, because it just, it worked better for the bike we were trying to make.
Yeah. You bring up a good point there. Like one of the, we have a pretty big group of people here at Trek that were riding fat bikes. We were riding other brand fat bikes before we had one. And our big passion, I think, as a group has been riding single track and kind of riding the trails you ride in the summertime when they're packed in either boot pack or machine pack with snow. And so we really wanted to build a single track fat bike. And they really kind of specialize in making a fat bike that rides like a mountain bike and will work on dirt as well, because that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was clear once the bike came out. I remember riding my first fat bike, and that was, I loved it. And then when I got a Farley, it was like, it went from a toy that maybe so I could ride in the winter to being like this bike that I love to ride.
And then the geometry has been a big part of that. Like, the you know, it's not as short as a stash, obviously, but a 440 millimeter chainstay with clearance for a 26x5 or 27.5x4 is really helps that bike have a nimble, traily feel while also having lots of flotation and all the fat bike qualities you like.
So yeah, let's start talking Farley right now, because there's been some really significant changes that have been made to that bike compared to last year. I mean, not only are you guys doing the 27.5x4 inch tires, but you're also bumping it up so it's got 5 inch, you know, 26x5 inch tire clearance. And you've got a carbon model. So let's just jump in. Well, I mean, like, let's just start off with, you know, why did you end up going for increasing the available wheel size to 26x5?
Lighter is better.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the carbon bike is really cool. Like the amount of, first of all, the amount of tire clearance we've been able to make happen on the carbon one is, and tire clearance and stiffness is just awesome. I mean, and carbon as material is really fun to work with on a project like that, because you get to really take kind of your goal for that frame project and really take it to 11, and also have a lightweight bike.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, Trek has a pretty good legacy with carbon. We've been doing this for a while now, and we have the labs right back here that we're always learning from, and so being able to apply it to fat bikes has only made sense.
Yeah,
especially considering how people were riding them, and there was definitely that demand for more of a performance-oriented fat bikes as well. So it made perfect sense to
and
put carbon.
To get the weight, I mean, what is the Farley coming at? Like 24 pounds out of the box, I believe?
Yep.
I remember my first fat bike was 43 pounds. I mean, you think about it, especially when you're riding them on single track all the time. I mean, you have to get off and walk occasionally. And, that, you know, the shoulder of Farley is way better than the shoulder of a steel, you know, bike with massive tires that weighs so much. I think it just makes the bikes more pleasurable to ride in so many ways.
So yeah, start to tell us about the 27.5x4. You know, how does it compare to a 26x5 inch tire? Why'd you go that route? You know, why are you guys pioneering that?
It's like Travis said, there are going to be conditions where people are going to still want to run 26x5 because super loose, super unpacked snow, it's going to have more flotation. But for the majority of people that I know, the majority of people that are riding groomed or pretty packed trail, the 27.5 is going to have more flotation than they're used to on a 26x4. It's going to roll faster, and it's going to deal much better with kind of chatter and, you know, the boot footprints and all the kind of crap we have to deal with riding in the snow. It has that longer contact patch. It's going to have better traction across ice and kind of
less bounce.
Stuff that sticks out. And less bounce. That's another big one. And I think the people that don't necessarily kind of understand what we say when we say that sometimes.
Yeah.
So the 26x4 tire has the same sidewall as the 26x4, but it has a shorter one than 26x5. You're going to have less pedal-induced bob as you're pedaling compared to a 5-inch tire with more flotation than a 26x4.
Yeah, and that comes in. There's so many people riding these bikes year-round. So when you're riding firm trail throughout the summer, it just performs better. Like Ted said, less bob. It edges everything out, makes it nice and smooth without getting, you know, too much of that.
It is amazing how much we're hearing now from all those warm weather states, the Arizonas, Florida, Southern Californias, who a lot of these customers now are like, you know, they want to see themselves on these bikes. They're selling so many of these. So if we put up a picture, even in our marketing, of somebody riding this bike on snow, you'll hear from those customers, those shops who want to see the picture of like that bike being ridden. That's not how I ride this bike, though. All my customers are riding it year round. And so we're getting a lot more of that. And we're selling a lot of these bikes in the warm weather states where they will never touch a single snowflake.
I think on that note, it opens so much more terrain. Like with a traditional 2-3 tire, you ride on the sand, you're going to sink in.
Yep.
And sand is going to be a really great place for this tire, too, because it's going to have more than enough flotation you need, but it's going to have a reduced rolling resistance. So if you're doing beach racing like they do in certain countries, or even just beach exploration, I think that the 27 5x4 is just going to be a great tire.
Yeah, it just opens up more trails. There's the world is bigger for you as a biker once you have it's wider.
I think that's one of the things that gets us so excited about riding both fat and plus size bikes, because it's opened up so much trails. For instance, around here, we have a bunch of moto trails that we never would have been able to ride before because the motos like churn up the top inch or two. But when you put a 3-inch tire out there, it feels really, really, really good. And it makes it a really nice place to end up riding. Same thing goes for the beach. So we just ended up gaining several hundred more miles of trail around here just because of the plus and the fat bike.
Awesome.
And that kind of thing is happening regionally, in a lot of different places. You wouldn't think that there would be a lot of fat bike sales in Arizona, but Arizona sells a ton of fat bikes because of the sand washes. And there's a rider there that has a local 25-mile network, and when he got a fat bike, he just got a 300-mile network because of all the sand washes that he can ride. So
let's shift gears. We haven't really talked about any of the specific tires or rims that you got going on. And you guys have released a lot of really, really interesting stuff right now. So let's start with the Wampa carbon rim.
Yes, on the 9.
Right, so we knew that if the 27 5x4-inch wheel bike was going to be a performance bike, we needed a carbon rim. So that was a co-development project with Bontrager, along with the Carbon Farley. And, it's summer and winter. It's a double wall rim, so it's durable enough for summer riding and light enough for winter racing.
Yeah, we really wanted something that was durable and could be a good summer solution as well.
And tubeless ready was, of course, a prerequisite with that as well.
So what's the width on that rim?
That rim is 80 millimeters outer.
So let's talk tubeless. The Jackalope rim is noted as being a really solid setup just because it goes tubeless so easily. It doesn't have the cutouts. It's got a really, really friendly rim profile that allows it to really go tubeless, with super narrow tape and a hand pump pretty much.
Yeah, we just didn't buy the story that you couldn't make a tubeless fat bike rim because the pressures were too low. And really what it took was a lot more attention to the detail of the depth of the rim well, the tolerance of the bead and the bead seat shelf. And you could make a fat bike rim that would run at 4.5 or 5 pounds and be able to air up with a floor pump. Now, those tolerances had to be tightened up quite a bit, and there were, some tricks with grooves and, hard O-ring sealing things that we did with that rim that we translated into the carbon Wampa rim, too. But obviously, when you have a tube that weighs maybe 400 or 500 grams, the opportunity to get rid of that is a lot of motivation.
Yeah, and like the... What's the rim called?
like,
no, it's a, what's the one we're called?
Jackalope.
Jackalope.
Sorry.
Like the Jackalope, the Wampa is a tape-based system, too, so it has a...
Yeah, it uses a little more tape. But
it's like a nice wide piece of tape that goes on there.
That's another thing that, like, having the Bontrager team in-house, you got wheels and tires, you got the team working together. So we've got, you know, our wheels and our tires to match them. They're constantly... The wheel engineers are tire engineers. That group is one of the same. So they're, you know, when they're building the wheel, they're looking at tires. When they're building a tire, they're looking at the wheels that it's going to go on. It's one, you know, one solution. Mm-hmm. Everything's tied together.
And we hate tubes.
So, yeah, let's start talking tires, because, I mean, that's a big part of the tubeless process. You guys are releasing a 4.7-inch tire. I think it's called the Barbara Ghazi. It looks like it's a fairly compact knob layout, not really super aggressive. It looks like it's going to roll pretty fast. There's a lot of siping, not a whole lot of ramps. Tell us about your design objectives.
We found with a larger tire, there's just so much more surface area. A lot of times you don't have to get as aggressive as you might think to get the traction you're after. And I know Travis worked very closely with all the testing of all the tires, and he can probably speak better to this.
Well, what we, you know, the design characteristic of ramping knobs is something that's so prevalent in the tire segment that I think a lot of tire design has to apply that just by the standard. When we build a test tire and we have the same tire that is ramped and unramped, it's not a characteristic that our best field testers can tell the difference in rolling performance. And in many cases, it's not a difference that is discernible in the lab. Rubber compound and casing plies and materials for casing usually have a much more significant impact on rolling efficiency than ramping knobs. And there is a compromise to significantly ramping knobs in that you make your tire somewhat directional performance. So unless we have a compelling reason to do it, we don't do it.
So we noticed that there was some siping going on with that Hodag. Could you... tell us about why you went with so many sipes.
Yeah, the siping. So the development of the Hodag, siping was another one of those small details that we spent a lot of time on in parallel with our compound research. And what we found is that siping in the right conditions improved adhesion. So hard-packed snow and ice on two tires with the same compound, the sipe tire, improved traction. Part of that process, what we also realize is that compound can play a bigger role in that adhesion on frozen hard surfaces than the siping. So we picked the best compound and the best surface knob design for that winter tire.
So it seems like a lot of the other 4.7, 4.8-inch tires are really aggressive. Why didn't you guys go that route? Why did you go for a more quick-rolling, lower knob, more compact knob layout?
Well, we had to have a tire for the new Farley that had the same diameter as the 27.5x4. We wanted to have that versatility on that tire, and we wanted our first tire in that category to be versatile in that weight was important. Rolling efficiency was important. So really tall knobs were out to make it the most versatile. And I think it is one of the lightest, 4.7-inch tires out there.
Yeah, one of the things that we really like to do is be accurate in our tire sizing.
Yeah.
So a lot of time, it's all over the board when you see a size marked on the side of a sidewall. But when you see ours at 3.8 or 4.7, we mean it. We're not trying to brag about having anything bigger than what it is. We're trying to be accurate so the consumer's got the best, understanding what they're actually getting.
So it seems like you guys designed a tire that kind of fits with the larger diameter philosophy and is a very much a performance-oriented tire. So it's going to roll fast. It's going to have really good all-around characteristics. It just might not be like your Expedition tire.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the prototype of that Barbara Ghazi was a tire that I raced at Fat Bike Nationals last year. So it's really fast. It's really pretty much competitive in weight with all the other tires out there, but it's really high volume. At Fat Bike Nationals in Utah, you didn't need to run low pressure. Surface was really firm. But if I was just going to go out there with one wheel set, I could take that one. I think I ran that tire at about 8 pounds in that race. But if it had snowed overnight or got really hot, I could have run 4 pounds too.
And it's a, you know, we've talked a lot about 27.5x4, but that the new Bart Bergazzi is a really good tire. I'm going to have a, there'll be times this year that I'll be really torn as far as which tire and wheel to run. But like I said, it's fast rolling with lots of traction too. It's a cool tire. And it's the knobs are very widely spaced, so it clears really well, which is another thing that I think isn't very important with fat bike tires. Yeah, it's a good tire.
So yeah, the big product we haven't talked about is the Narwhal. You guys are starting to offer up a studded tire, which is really kind of a new category for the line.
Yeah, so that one's coming into stock in just a couple of weeks. So it you'll see a lot more about it here once it gets in stock in track dealers. But yeah, it's got a studded version and also a studdable version. It's got 160 tungsten carbon studs on the studdable version or the studded version, and it's an aggressive. You know, when traction matters, when things are kind of firm and you really just want to make sure that you hook up, it's the tire to go to.
I'm sorry, but maybe you said it. What's the stud material? Is it carbide, aluminum, steel?
They're tungsten, right?
Yeah, tungsten carbides. So they're, yeah, and I think there's 160 of them per tire. So they, you know, went with that just to be durable enough and to maintain the shape on the end of the actual stud to make sure that it continues to bite, doesn't get round off or anything.
And also to keep the weight reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's tires with more studs out there, but in our testing we found that to be a kind of a sweet spot for that kind of late season icy riding that we see so much.
Yeah, I see it too much.
Oh, too much.
So we've talked about all sorts of interesting stuff that's going to be available this winter, but I mean, you guys are doing all sorts of development. Do you have anything you can tease out that's coming down the pipe?
Always.
Not that we can talk about today.
We do have one more fat bike tire that's coming out. So the Rougarou, which is also, it's going to be like the Hodag as far as size goes, 26 by 3.8. And it's more of your 26-inch race tire. So it's going to be as light as we can go with a very fast-rolling kind of profile. It's really optimizing that 26-inch wheel side for the Varley to be a fast-rolling kind of a race-style tire.
Interesting. So are you guys talking like a kind of micro-knob-type design?
I would say the micro-knob is a fairly accurate description. It's a minimized casing to reduce the energy loss into the tire, hysteresis, and it's a small knob. So it's designed for groomed terrain. To be fast on groomed terrain.
Yeah, and it's coming in under 1,100 grams, so pretty excited about that one.
You know, one thing I'd like to kind of hit on again is just on the new Farley, and that's the Stranglehold Dropout, which is the same sledding dropout from the Stash, and it's actually on the Farley. And we put that there for a number of reasons. I think the most important of which is to dial in the performance of the Farley for what you're riding. So in deeper, looser packed snow, you can slide the dropout back to a 455 millimeter chain stay, which will help with flotation and stability. And then if you're riding hard pack snow or groomers, you can slide it all the way forward to the 440 millimeter chain stay length with plenty of clearance for both 5-inch and the 27.5 by 4-inch at that shortest position.
And that's something that really excites me because based on my beach riding, single speed is huge. It really helps you to preserve your drivetrain and you know, when you're riding on the beach, you don't have hills, so you don't need to shift a lot. So having the sliding dropouts increases a lot of versatility in the Midwest.
Yeah, it uses the same. So the hardware is the same between the Stash, the Superfly single speed, and the Farley. So it's all the same dropout hardware. So you could take the single speed hanger off your, that's the warranty part for the Superfly single speed, and that would go onto the new Farley or the Stash. And if someone ever makes an internally geared 190 mil space hub with a 12 mil vessel, you could have a internally geared hub on the bike. So if anybody's listening out there.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn cool that you guys are building in that kind of versatility into your bikes. I really appreciate it. You know, it really extends the range and applicability of the bikes that you're riding.
But I think, you know, when I'm looking at our kind of, at least the hardtails that I've been working on lately, is really adding versatility has been a big push internally. So to make the bikes work with multiple wheel sizes for multiple riders, allow a bit of geometry adjustment so people can really kind of, you know, go through some of the experiments we've done and looking at chainsail length and kind of figuring out where the sweet spot for the way they ride is.
Yeah, and I know if you go into the wheel and tire room, they've got stashes and they're playing with all sorts of stuff on them.
Yeah.
Like I've ridden with a traditional 29, like the Line Elite 29. Wheel we have for Bontrager, and it's still a super fun, just flat out 29er bike. And then, you know, throw in the Line Plus wheels, and then it's, you know, back to Plus, and it's super fun.
And, you know, 29 Plus fits just fine in the new Farley. That's another thing that we haven't even talked about yet, but that there's plenty of clearance in there for 29 Plus as well.
Yeah, that's a really important piece to end up bringing in here because, I mean, that adds a ton of versatility. We've talked about, you know, two potential, you know, badass wheel sets for a Farley. Now we, you know, there's a third one that really could kick butt for four season use.
And we can add to that the Q factor thing that we haven't even talked about yet, which was on the new Farley is designed to work if you're running a one by with the narrower Q factor standard. So it is a 121 press fit bottom bracket, but it works with the 100 mil style crank versus the 170 Q factor crank, 170 millimeter rear Q factor crank instead of the 190. It gets.
That's really cool because biomechanically it opens up more people to be able to end up riding their fat bike year round and specifically riding, you know, 29 plus during the summer also. And I think the more people we get riding 29 plus, the more people we're going to get really stoked on it.
And I know a lot of the guys that I've ridden with around, you know, here, we've got some trails just across the street, which is one of the best things about working here at Trek. We can, you know, take what we're making and go out and just play with it and experiment with it. But a lot of the guys that I've ridden with that before were on kind of trail 29ers, and then they've gone to the 29 plus stash this year, and they become better riders. Like, they become more confident, like having that just more traction, you know, just a wider wheel underfoot, wider tire kind of meeting up with the ground. So you've really seen a lot of people improve their riding in just one summer, and they've been riding for years. So that bike really.
Yeah, the perception is definitely a very different reality with 29 plus. I know that, like, internally when we rode the first Nard tires years ago, we were like, oh, these are going to be slow and heavy and just going to be a fat bike. But you get on, you're like, holy crap, this rolls fast. this is a trail bike. This isn't a big squishy tire.
There was a lot of that when we launched the stash as well, too. We had a big demo push with that as well, where we sent out all of our demo rigs. We loaded them up with stashes, and it was one of those things where we realized that it wasn't going to happen until people got on them. Much like 29ers originally, like a decade ago, where people just had to try them, and it was a bit of a groundswell for acceptance, and I think that's what's going to be happening here as well, too, is people will get on them, and we're going to continue to push demos for Stash and for 29 Plus and for our fat bikes as well, too, and just having people on them is getting shop guys and consumers on them, and that's what's going to help make the difference.
Yeah, we really believe, I was going to say, we definitely really believe in 29 Plus. Like, there's, you know, we talked about it a bit earlier, but, you know, we knew that 27.5 plus was coming and it was going to be a big industry trend, but we've been experiencing 29 plus for a long time and really believed in it. And we kind of stuck by it, and I think it's good we did.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely think that the 29 plus offers a lot of advantages to a lot of different skills of riders. I mean, the advanced rider is going to end up seeing advantages, but I think, you know, more beginning riders, it rolls so well. It's so forgiving. It's just a really, really, really great platform for just about any rider to be on.
Well, I'm sure we'll see other 29 pluses come out. You know, we have an anomaly in the industry now where big segments of brands decided to jump on the bandwagon of 27.5 plus with zero market data to justify it. So that's something where everyone's scratching their heads about a little bit. It is what it is, and, you know, sometimes you have to react to trends. We found that if we follow our research and development process, we have good rewards for that. And, you know, that's, you know, all of that field testing of different wheel sizes really informs the conversation. Our perspective is that it informs that there's, for the 27.5 inch rider, so if you look at everyone on normal mountain bikes, there's a pretty good compelling argument for 27.5 plus. And for a 29-inch rider, there's a pretty good compelling argument for 29+. There's less of an argument to pit 27.5+ against 29+. They're as different as 27.5 normal size mountain bike tire and 29 normal size mountain bike tire. And right now, those are different consumers.
It's super cool to see that Trek is coming out with new products, pushing the envelope and trying to make bikes just work better for us, work faster for us, and have more fun when we're out on the trails.
We always do best when we can kind of get out in front and set the trends or do what we believe in.
Yeah, we've got some impressive engineers, designers, and whatever else that are they're doing the research. They're putting in the time to figure out how to make bikes work best. And when we can follow them instead of we just follow them and prove out what they're thinking, it works.
It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking some time to sit down with a couple of regular guys and share what you know about fat biking and plus bikes.
Quite welcome.
Yeah, anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Fat Camp and dealing with all of our technical difficulties. You can find more episodes at fat-bike.com/radio. We're really pleased to end up being able to end up providing this kind of coverage, so please check out other shows. Music tonight is provided by Yacht, and the song name was Utopia. That is all available through the Free Music Archive, and hopefully we'll catch you sometime out on the trail.